This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, Master of the Web, Lady Dawn of House Wright, Sir Chris of House Farber, Lady Tracy of House Faw, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys and Lady of Jameson, Lord John of House Fry, Lady Juliana of House Stradley, Sir David of House Fraser, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry, Lady Madeline of House Fritzel, Lady Adrian of House Dillard, Lady Ashley of House Gardner, Lady Lismalyn of House Morales.
This episode of Bend the Knee is protected by Sir Ryan of House Turbush, Lady Sarah the Unraveler.
Our current champion is Lady Kira of House Arnold.
Our current Master of Coin is Lord Jason of House Ross.
Squire to Sir Matt, Lady Betsy of House Hudson.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into Sansa 4 of A Clash of Kings. And in our Raven, we will be talking about Tyrick Lannister.
Yes, Ez. There's been a little bit of news, right, going on. HBO's pushing out a bunch of stuff to let everybody know, hey, it's the 10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
Of the show, okay? A lot of people are getting ready for their marathrones, as they're calling it. So,
wow.
I mean, 10 years ago, as did we think that this would be this huge of a show and do all of these things? And
no, you know, it's crazy. I was bootlegging it, you know, with my buddies, and we were all trying to, like, illegally download it and stuff because we were just coming out of college. Like, crazy stuff, man. I mean, no, it's wild, and I remember loving it and diving into that first book before it came out, and then season one comes out, I think it's epic, and then later on pick up with it, and you and I started kind of speculating, talking, theorizing, and can't believe it, man. I really can't. Crazy. It's life-changing. Okay, there you go.
And you, what is a favorite moment? What are some favorite moments from you from the show?
Oh, gosh, favorite moments from the show? On the spot, huh?
Any particular scenes that you're just like, wow, that was really...
I mean, people know this already, but I always love Beric Dondarrion and when he's fighting the Hound. You know, like, I always thought that was a sick, sick, sick moment. So I really enjoyed that. Golly, all of season one is great. I just love, you know, Ned Stark. Yeah. He's fantastic. Other real big moments, I mean... All the obvious ones with, you know, the big moments. I mean, you know, the Red Wedding, you know, Hodor, all that good stuff. I'm trying to think of ones that are maybe, there's some that stand out in my mind that, like, there's some scenes with Littlefinger where he's just walking through a brothel and I'm going, what is going on up
going
here?
On. Like,
it's crazy. And I think that was the thing is, like, you're paying attention to Littlefinger and every word he's saying while some crazy sex scene is happening in the back. And it's just like, that's what Game of Thrones did to you. And you're like, wow, this is wild. So.
Yeah. For me, I would say again, the obvious ones, I still think my favorite is, Arya. I guess sort of funny moment. Cause it's actually kind of odd that Game of Thrones has, like, sort of funny moments, because it's not really that type of a show. It's so serious that the funny moments really stand out. So Arya and the Hound, I just love. I love when they're running around together. The scene at the crossroads, the conversation about chicken, right? And you're just like, this is about to get real serious real fast. And the Hound is like, and then he just kills all those people. That is great. Jon Snow, King in the North. I think that's probably the most epic moment probably in the whole show. Tyrion's speech, his trial is just, I mean, I think I'm pretty, he won awards almost every season, but I mean, I would have to imagine that season he won an award. Yeah. It didn't go down the way we had hoped, the way you hope, but The Viper's fight with the mountain is just done so well on screen. It's so cool. Such a cool scene. Man, even the opening, I think the opening, the very beginning, right? The prologue with Royce and those guys, the White Walkers, and then you get to the following scene where Ned and it's episode one, although it obviously looks different because most pilot TV shows look different. Like Tyrion's hair is really yellow and the costuming is different and things like that. But I do think that it did a really good job of setting the stage of this grand moment of the king coming north.
Yeah.
And the Hand of the King is dead and everything like that. Jon's fight with the White Walker at Hardhome is probably his sort of cool fight scene. So that's good. I'm trying to think. Daenerys's best scene is easily when she gets the Unsullied army, right? And she basically does her mic drop and like walks away. that's obviously epic for her.
Yeah, I was just thinking, just because I haven't seen the show in a long time, besides season 8's most recent thing I've seen, and Theon. At the end there, man, I'm in tears. Yeah. Like Jenny's song and stuff like that. That is some good stuff. There are some good things that came out of that last season where you're like, all right, wow, that was kind of cool.
Episodes 1-3, I still think are great. I think are great. Yeah. Just some other kind of fun things. I think it starts around season 7, right? Tormund and Brienne, like, you know, when he's always like staring at her. Like that it's just hilarious. And
right.
Tormund is definitely great. So there's definitely a lot of really, really good moments in the show. Even some of the smaller things that get sprinkled throughout. Dawn and Egret, I think, has done really well on screen. It's heartbreaking, obviously, when she when she dies. So yeah, great show. So guys, what are some of your favorite memories specifically from the show? Just the way you saw it on screen and what you thought was really, really epic. Since it is the 10th anniversary of the show.
Yeah. Well, when's season 9 coming out? That's coming out soon, right?
Ooh, who knows, man? Who knows?
Oh, God. Nah, that's cool. Awesome. Crazy to think about. All right. Well, friends, we will be coming back. We have a Raven this week. We're going to be coming back with the Maester Study probably next week. Maybe we'll dive back into some House of the Dragon and things like that. We're trying to look into how we want to reformat that and, you know, think about the prequels a bit more. I need to start reading it again. I need to actually go back and, you know, not just the
Fire and
Wiki
Blood
page, but yeah, go back and really start listening and reading, you know, the outline there. So we learned and some stuff. In our Patreon thing last night.
Yeah, we did two Patreon things. I recorded one that's already released, just sort of something about Jenny's song. So there is that. And then we recorded sort of an impromptu. We were just kind of talking with a few bannermen. We were just doing a Zoom sort of hangout. We're just like, well, hey, you guys want to talk about a few things? So we just hit record and recorded sort of something I've been working on. Where's King Aegon Targaryen's crown? Well, it gets lost in Dorne. That's kind of the last of it. But what does
pretty
that
sick
mean? So it's just kind of an impromptu conversation about that. But we do have that coming as well on Patreon. And our next Bannerman Zoom hangout is...
Yeah.
Are we saying Friday the 23rd?
Yeah. Friday the 23rd... Yeah, I think so. Yeah, is that what we have in the docket? I'm pretty sure.
I think so. Yeah. So not this weekend, this coming Friday, but next Friday.
Yep.
23rd. Perfect. Yep. Okay. All right, guys. Well, with that, let's dive into the reread. Actually, sort of a shorter chapter this week. This is a Sansa chapter with Ser Dantas, the Hound, and Tyrion. Sansa meets again with Ser Dantas in the Godswood and learns that he hears more things as a fool than he ever did a knight. And Varys the Spider pays in gold for anything overheard, making Dantas believe that Moonboy has been working for Varys for years. Dantas tells her that Stannis burned the Godswood at Storm's End at behest of the Red Woman. When Sansa asks him to make good on his promise, Dantas tells her the time is not right for their escape. Dantas does promise her that when his friend returns to King's Landing, they will have a ship to escape on. Sansa does not want to return to her room yet, so she goes up to the roof where she is surprised by the Hound. Clegane is in a foul mood as ever and tells her that he enjoys killing and that the only cowards fight with fire. He claims he fears no man, but Sansa thinks that he does fear his brother. Once again, he assures her that there are no true knights. That night, Sansa has a dream when she is surrounded by a mob and calls out to the great knights, but none respond to her call. She feels herself bleeding and awakes to find the sheets soaked with blood. She realizes that she has just had her first flowering and burns the sheets in fear that Joffrey will want to, find out and want to bed her. Her maids catch her before and bring her before the queen, but Cersei confronts her, knowing the girl is frightened at the prospect of marrying Joffrey. She tells her how difficult Joffrey was to bear and how Robert was out hunting when Joffrey was born. Cersei informs her that while Sansa may not love Joffrey, she will love the children she bears him. The queen also reveals that Robert always wanted to be loved, to have friends, and to be cheered, and her brother Tyrion has the same disease. She tells Sansa love is poison, a sweet poison, yes, but it will kill you all the same.
Well, yeah, it's funny to hear Joffrey there. I'm like, where I'm at reading ahead right now, I'm just like, wait, we're so far beyond that. It's just kind of like funny thinking back. Yep, we still have to put up with that guy for a while. Right. And we don't want him to know what's going on. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the interesting dynamics with this chapter, I would say, is you get this sort of difference, right, I suppose, between Dantus, who is this fool and he's an idiot and would absolutely get slaughtered in any fight he would ever be in, and he is, you know, it's almost like in her head Sansa is kind of portraying him. They're sort of building it up, right? They're calling each other those sort of pet names and then she runs into the Hound, who's kind of mean to her and whatever, but it's ultimately going to be the Hound that is the knight she needs when King's Landing does get sacked here shortly. And so I just think I've always found that kind of interesting, the difference between the two.
Yeah, and it's almost like there's that's a really good point, that the knight she has is not the knight she needs. That knight is right now in service to the Lannisters. And there'll come a time where, here shortly, he will be someone who could take her away. And she does seem to almost be subconsciously somewhat attracted to him. It's almost like her attraction shifts from fancy armor and good-looking knights to just someone who can do what needs to be done. You know what I mean? It's like almost like a more practical kind of an attraction, if you will, like. Because the Hound can do it. I mean, if she needs to, he's someone who will kill people, who can rescue her, who can take care of her and things like that. Dantos is just a fool. He's just like, he's talking to Moon Boy.
He has tin armor and carries a melon as a morning star, right? I mean, he's at that tourney. Yeah. So and then obviously we know what sort of his end becomes. And the guy who plays him in the show, I think, does like a great job of sort of showing this guy off. And do you think it's interesting that Littlefinger uses this guy, and that he seems like somebody that Littlefinger or Varys, right? We know they use all kinds of people, but this seems like somebody that's like, do you really think that this guy is capable of doing what you want to do? You're giving this guy a lot of secrets. I mean, if he messes up, I find that odd.
Well, the only thing I could think is that maybe Littlefinger was rushed on his way, you know, because he's, I don't know, maybe he was rushing this decision a little bit and decides to go with him. Because, yeah, I mean, it is a lot to kind of put on this guy who, he's also someone, though, you could, if he spills any secrets that might tie him to Littlefinger, I mean, he's a drunk, he's a fool. He's already kind of pretty low down there, so you can dismiss it and just say, he's a drunken idiot, like, pay him no mind type of thing. So still kind of risky, but I think he wants to prove himself and he wants to have some type of status and honor or whatever. And so Littlefinger's great at manipulating and giving you just what you need or what you want, or knowing what you need or what you want, and then trying to supply that and then getting you to do something for him. Because he does talk about Varys, and he talks about Moon Boy being in his employ, and they don't even know, you know, what they it's as if they're not even in the room. They allow the fools to hear things that they shouldn't hear. Very smart for Varys and Littlefinger to have one of those guys each in there. And I think maybe if Moon Boy is under the employ of Varys, it was important for Littlefinger to say, I need my own guy in there, because Varys has got an edge on me in that room. So,
yeah. I guess it comes down to, is it smart or sort of stupid that they use these people? Because on one hand, it's like, it's all the political intrigue, right? And the chess battle that goes back and forth, because it's somebody that Cersei is going to obviously detest. Mm-hmm. Do you think Cersei knows? I mean, she seems so smart in it that she would have to think that literally anybody and everybody could be a spy, could be using information, no matter how idiotic they come across.
Right. And it's almost like, though, there's so many different ways to look, that you're looking at people who are more sophisticated and intelligent, and maybe you're overlooking, you know, I don't know, a fool or a servant or someone who's there's so too many places to look. You almost, like, Varys and Littlefinger have you triple thinking, you know, double taking left and right, thinking about who's employed. I mean, Tyrion already does it. He's already jumping through mental hoops trying to think about, yeah, what's happening with like who are Cersei's people? Varys, can I trust him? Littlefinger, keep an eye on him. Don't want to send him away to rescue everyone, you know, and meet with the Tyrells, but he has to. So yeah, it's quite interesting. It is really cool, though, that there's little tiny hints here as to who he's working for. You know what I mean? Because, like, when you read this again and during a reread, you're like, okay, wow, that's interesting that we like Ser Dantos and because before, I don't know, my first read through, I was just like, is this guy really going to think about your first time reading it? Like, this guy's going to do what? Like, Sansa, come on. He's a drunk. The whole time I'm thinking he's just after her, like, as in he wanted her. You know what I mean? And was almost like preying on her in a sense. So I didn't like that. I was a little bit like nervous for Sansa. And really, you know, it's, I mean, Littlefinger sees the connection. She helps spare his life and uses that against him. And keeps him close to Sansa when he can't be there. So
yeah,
wild.
And then Littlefinger takes him out. Yeah, I wonder what the plan was. I wonder what the plan was as when you were gonna get her out. Did because it all happens obviously as at the purple wedding when Joffrey's killed, when he's supposed to be married to Marjorie, right? And we know. Elena Tyrell, right? She uses the hairpin and uses that that poison, and then that under all of that is when Littlefinger gets her out. But correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure somebody's like, "Oh, here we go again." Sir Matt doesn't even read the books. I don't think there's any sort of communication between Littlefinger and Elena Tyrell, is there? As to that we know of, that that he knew Joffrey was going to be killed at that wedding, because that's when he smuggles her out.
Huh. Like open direct communication? Let me think here. I don't know. I'll look report.
Or even anything that knows that. I mean, is it just the right time to do it?
So you're saying
this whole deal, yeah, with Dantus. Ultimately they do get her out, right? They get Sansa out. But it comes when at the purple wedding, because Joffrey's killed. Right. Peter Baelish had left King's Landing. He does not immediately go to the Vale and is instead remains near the city until the wedding between Joffrey and Margaery, in which King Joffrey is killed. In the ensuing chaos, Sansa is spirited out by Dantus and Oswell Kettleblack that rows him to the ship Blackwater Bay, where Peter awaits. When Sir Lorthor Brune's crossbow kills Dantus, Peter explains to Sansa that she will be wanted in connection with Joffrey's death, and is It is the only sure way he'll know that he will remain silent, right? Because he kills Dantus. He then goes on to explain his role in Joffrey's murdering. Oh, I guess he did. I'm totally wrong. Having plotted it with Olenna Tyrell, he reveals the involvement. So yeah, he tells her the whole thing. I guess I was forgetting that he was involved.
Yeah. So what happens? So like remember they want to marry Sansa to one of their own, and then Tywin kind of the Lannisters foil that plan for Sansa to go to Tyrion, and so it's now okay, we're gonna get. Like, so there's quickly, so Olenna sabotages Tywin's plan to marry his widowed daughter, Cersei to Willis, right? Even though Mace is thinking about it.
That's correct. See, so this is what happens. Sometimes I get the show. Melded in my brain, and I just think of Olenna telling Jaime it was me. You know, I was the one that did it.
Littlefinger is, and again, it's all like political favors and maneuvering, because then he's
a better question is, to go along with this, what is his plan for the Battle of the Blackwater? Does Baelish just think that Stannis is going to lose? Does he also know about the wildfire, Tyrion's plan at the wildfire, and think they're going to win? Because Sansa almost gets killed.
yeah, they're all in a pickle there. And excuse me. Actually, right, he's sent to go get the Tyrells, right, to negotiate with them. So that's, Tyrion sends him out, and he has to negotiate. So yeah, there's nothing he can do right now. I mean, like, it's not easy just to kind of spirit her away. The whole thing is he's getting that lordship. This is the thing that gets him a lordship that would get him away from King's Landing. So once that's in motion, now he can bring Sansa with him. Otherwise, he's still in King's Landing. Might as well keep around and keep an eye on her and keep her close or whatever. But once he goes and makes this alliance, he asks for, one of the things he gets, he wants to be well rewarded. And so, yeah, Tyrion's like, absolutely, whatever you want. Harrenhal, it's all yours. And he gets the Tyrells, and that's his kind of, you know, hero moment for King's Landing, right?
Yeah.
So,
okay. All right. Well, let's move over to, I guess, the Hound here. So Sansa has this conversation with the Hound, right? Where she doesn't want to go to her room. She's on the roof, you know, and she's talking to him. She kind of tells him that, because they're seeing the smoke, right? Because Stannis is burning as Stannis is approaching, he's burning a lot of the godswood to try and smoke Tyrion's men out, because that's where they're all camped. They does set the stage here that Stannis's things are, if you're reading this for the first time, that things don't seem good. Stannis is really knows what he's doing.
Well, yeah, and he's he's totally given in to his red sorceress, and burning of God's woods, you know, it doesn't really matter anymore to him. It's just like, let them all burn, give them all to the flames. But yes, it doesn't look good. It does look like we're in major trouble in King's Landing, and that he's ready to, he didn't have to stop. The one thing they were hoping was that at Storm's End, that Courtney Penrose and others would be able to kind of like hold that, and that he couldn't move against King's Landing without also already having his home kind of keep. Well, he gets that in like one night, and that is not what Tyrion or others expected. And then that's all because of Melisandre. Boom. Now he's heading over to King's Landing, and yeah, it looks like he's going to win. Everything would make you think that he's going to win this thing. So
yeah,
to the point where we know later Cersei is like ready to, you know,
kill herself.
Yeah.
Which should point to a lot of things that we continuously say about Stannis in upcoming Winds of Winter chapters, that here's another moment of Stannis looking like a really great battle commander and getting ready for this battle where he's going to take King's Landing. I mean, obviously it doesn't go his way, but I think it's hard to use that against Stannis. I mean, how often has wildfire bombs been set off, you know, in the history of tactics, and it's not like it's something easy to sort of produce. So I don't think you could have predicted that at all.
You, what you mean from Stannis's?
Yeah,
perspective.
Yeah,
oh, perspective. Yeah. No, it's a genius. I mean, like, you know, Tyrion later on, Tywin will totally give him like, yeah, that was the chain was very important. Cersei's already kind of taken some credit, right, for the getting the pyromancers all fired up and making everything. But then how to keep them in the harbor, how to keep them close to use the wildfire. Yeah, it does. It's not something that has been employed before. Not something you're used to seeing used. So Stannis can't really, you know, anticipate that. But why didn't Melisandre see it in her flames?
That's a good question.
Were they green flames? And so she couldn't see
it? You know who does see it? Yeah. Patchface.
He does see it. Oh, they should. The whole time. And he's right there. He is saying it right around Stannis. My gosh. Crazy.
Yeah. Okay. So after this, after they kind of have their thing and what she talks about, you know, you not being a true knight, although he's actually probably the truest knight that she'll come across, right? Because he tells her that everyone around her is liars, which includes Dantus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then we come to the scene, I think, which the show does pretty good as well, showing where she has her flower.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hood, right? And then she's, you know, just she's freaking out. Obviously, she's trying to rip the sheets off. She realizes that people may come. So she's got a knife out and she's trying to just cut out the spot on the bed. And then she realizes that's not enough. It's soaked through. So she tries to throw the mattress in the fire. There's smoke coming out. The handmaidens see it all, and then we go from there. Now, I will say, in the show, this is done slightly differently, right? Because it happened. I think in the show, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of this happens afterwards. I think after she's married to Tyrion.
Because Shay's in there, right, or something like that.
Shay is in there, remember? And then Shay catches the handmaiden who sees as she's running to Cersei. So it's way different timeline. Because I think in the show, it's like she doesn't want to, you know, the whole deal is she won't have to marry Tyrion until she's flowered, and then it all goes that way.
Yeah,
so.
Or he's moved his Shay plans up, or yeah, something like that. It's a little out of
I think it's it is. But Shay, you're at, yeah, Shay is there because Shay is Sansa is there. Shay is not there here, but
right.
Give her a slightly bigger role in the show. So then she goes to Cersei, and Cersei sort of tells him how it's been for her, which is some good insight to Cersei's character, where Robert was off hunting when she was having kids. Now, was it Robert's kids? No, but still, it just causes you again to think of how things could have been different, how things could have been different for Cersei. You know, she's always talking about how it's always her and Jaime, always, but I don't know. I think if Robert had been a better guy, I think she could have changed her mind.
Yeah, for sure. And then just the obsession with Lyanna and all that kind of stuff. And then she didn't get Rhaegar. A lot of things didn't. They both weren't getting what they wanted ultimately. And then it ended up not working out well. But yeah, her sharing that does, I think, make us like Cersei a little bit more, right? Or feel for her or connect with her and think, wow, you know, all right. She gets it. She's just being a realist, and she's this mother, queen regent, who's trying to keep everything together. And honestly, Sansa, just by her nature, and she's, you know, all the things, like, is she's good. She would be good for Joffrey, besides the traitor's blood. But right. But besides that, it would have been a good thing. So, yeah, she's definitely trying to prep her for, no, this is just the way it is. This is life. you know, kind of get used to it. And it's a big growth moment for Sansa. And then for Cersei, it's one of those, you know, good insights into she's had it very, very kind of rough, you know, and with Robert, and then just all, you know, turn to Jaime. So what if Jaime wouldn't have been there? You ever think about that? Like, what if Jaime Lannister would not have become one of the Kingsguard and would have still been off at Castle Rock, happened? You know? Yeah, like would she have been closer with Robert, or would she have actually...
Probably.
You know what I mean? Is his proximity make it to where it's just easier to go to him or something?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. If he had been just sort of in Casterly Rock, absolutely. Yeah. Because they just wouldn't have seen each other. So, all right. Well, let's reread for this week. Kind of a shorter chapter, honestly, but things will pick up next week as we go back to John and Egret and things. Let's just say things are going to heat up. Okay, I'll just say that. But all right, do we have a raven for today?
Yes, we have a raven, and this kind of fits in with some of the talk about the Lannisters, and maybe even Sansa is somewhat kind of connected to this as well, in King's Landing. So let's see, who is this from here? Let me scroll down. So we have it from Lady Emma. Lady Emma. All right, let me see. It's quite a long one. Tyrick Lannister. Here we go. Hello, good sirs. Longtime listener, first time theorist. Love the podcast. Especially love it when you guys discuss wild theories and get lost in deep, dark rabbit holes. I didn't know they were so deep and dark. I just knew they were rabbit holes, you know? Mm-hmm. So I thought I would share some thoughts I've been having about the series lately to see if you want to dive into this one with me. Sorry in advance for the long email. I've been thinking about Tyrick Lannister ever since you guys covered the chapter in A Clash of Kings about the riot in King's Landing, and have come to the conclusion that Tyrick, who goes missing during the riot, is 100% alive and will be important later. For a bit of background, Tyrick is the son of Tyget Lannister. So this makes him Cersei and Jaime and Tyrion's first cousin. He is the Lannister who, you may remember, gets the nickname Wet Nurse, as he has been married off to the heir of House Hayford, who is still a baby at the time of the wedding. This union is, of course, organized so the Lannisters can claim House Hayford's lands. Tyrick also happened to be a squire to the late Robert Baratheon alongside his cousin Lancel. So, why do I think he's alive? First of all, his body is never, ever found. This is extremely odd to me, as everyone else who dies or is injured in the riots turns up. And in A Song of Ice and Fire, if someone dies off screen, I'm immediately skeptical. Even more suspiciously, Tyrick is mentioned several times after he goes missing, as if Gurr is making sure we don't forget about him. Immediately after the riot, Tyrion asks Bywater to make sure that Tyrick is found, quote, alive or dead, and it is made clear to the reader that finding him is extremely important to Tyrion. All right, in A Storm of Swords, Tyrick is brought up twice more in two different Tyrion chapters, with both Jacelyn Bywater and Varys saying that he is nowhere to be found, despite 4,400 guards being tasked with finding him. Tyrick is mentioned again in A Feast for Crows, this time in a Jaime chapter. Adam Marbrand mentions that he also searched for Tyrick, but found nothing more than Bywater did. We get a few more details this time. When Marbrand mentions that Tyrick's horse was found, but without a rider, he also says that the mob left all the corpses to lie in the street. So it's strange that Tyrick's was not among them. How likely is it that he is dead if he is the only person to vanish without a trace? To me, it seems like these little reminders are Gurm's way of encouraging the reader to think a little bit more about Tyrick's fate. So, What happened to him? My primary theory is that one of our resident schemers, Varys or Littlefinger, snatched him up in the chaos and have him in hiding somewhere in order to use him to their advantage later. The question is, which of them had the means, motive, and opportunity to do this? Let's look at Varys first. Varys is not part of the group that escorts Myrcella to the docks before the riot, and I think his absence is notable. He is the master of whisperers after all, and he knows as much as he says he does. He probably knew the risk of the hungry crowd rioting when the privileged, well-fed Lannisters passed by. Varys could also have organized the entire thing pretty easily and may well have been in the crowd to act as an instigator in one of his many disguises. But what would his motive be? Jaime touches on this at one point in A Feast for Crows, thinking back to how Tyrick was a squire for Robert and may well have information about Robert's murder. Information is valuable, and Varys might have decided that Tyrick could be used as a witness against Cersei when the time is right. It also could be just as simple as having a Lannister hostage at your disposal if the Lannisters ever turn against him for any reason in the future. These same motives could apply to Littlefinger too, and he does seem to be involved in every scheme in Westeros, so to me, it is just as likely that this is his doing. Littlefinger was not present in the city at the time the riot occurred, and he could easily have paid someone to instigate it. The riots also seem to benefit Littlefinger in a number of additional ways. One, the High Septon is killed, leaving this position free, and Littlefinger always seems to have a plan to try and get one of his own men promoted to positions of power when they become available. I know it is accepted by those in King's Landing that Tyrion selected the new High Sparrow, but maybe he just happened to get in front of Littlefinger this time. A Kettle Black does end up killing this replaced High Septon after all. Okay, yeah. Speaking of Osmond Kettle Black, becomes a member of the Kingsguard due to the death of Preston Greenfield, and we all know now that the Kettle Blacks are loyal to Littlefinger. Convenient that a position would come up at this time, huh? Number three, if it wasn't for the Hound, the Chaos could possibly have been an opportunity to remove Sansa from King's Landing, as we know Littlefinger wanted to do. These seem like pretty compelling reasons to me on their own. Maybe these, along with kidnapping and hiding Tyrick for the same reasons Varys would want to, are the only reasons Littlefinger would have to get involved in organizing the riot. But I have gone a little further and developed a theory that is a little more out there. Strap in. So here we go. Is it possible Littlefinger wants to use... Yes, it is. Is it possible that Littlefinger wants to use Tyrick to control House Hayford's lands so the Lannisters cannot? Of course, Tyrick is a Lannister, so he probably wouldn't agree to this willingly, but Littlefinger could blackmail him about exposing the truth and his possible involvement in Robert's murder to get him to comply. After all, if that all comes out, the Lannisters' credibility would be destroyed and Tyrick punished accordingly, which I'm sure he would be keen to avoid. Doing this would mean that Littlefinger would have control over influential lands close to King's Landing and hold the Vale and Harrenhal. He is also friendly with the Boltons and the Tyrells due to the marriages and the alliances he set up for these houses, not to mention the schemes he planned with them. This is quite an impressive amount of power for someone who is not highborn. He has acquired so much influence and control since the beginning of A Game of Thrones. I really think he is always looking at ways to acquire more lands, so eventually all of Westeros will belong to him, or at least ally with him. And the Iron Throne will fall to him without too much resistance. This leads me to the wilder aspect of this theory, that is to speculate what is going on at Rosby. Bear with me. I promise I have a point. Something I noticed on my second read of A Dance with Dragons was how much the Rosby's ward is mentioned after Giles Rosby dies. It's strange, as Pycelle repeatedly tries to talk about this mysterious ward when discussing who should take over at Rosby, but he is not listened to. The same ward is also mentioned to have turned away Lady Falsey Stokeworth and her husband when they were on their way to King's Landing in a feast for crows. There is a strange amount of attention to pay to this unnamed character, so Gurr must have a plan for him. Who is this person, and why would he turn the Stokeworths away? I think it's because they could possibly recognize him as being, you guessed it, Tyrick Lannister. Tyrick could very well be living there under a different name, possibly a bastard name, as Falsey describes the ward is ill-born, and would be easily recognized as being a Lannister if the Stokeworths actually laid eyes on him. It seems like Rosby would be a convenient place to hide Tyrick, as it is close to King's Landing, and it seems like quite a small household, so easier to keep secrets within. This also begs the question, was Giles Rosby in league with Littlefinger? It could be the case, I suppose, as I think Littlefinger has alliances everywhere, and I'm sure his scheming goes far beyond what we know so far. Rosby is an important chess piece, as it provides a lot of the food to King's Landing, so it would make sense for Littlefinger to buddy up with the Rosbys, although I'm not sure what he would have offered them in return for their help, other than cold hard cash. Anyway, Pycelle says Rosby's ward has a claim to inherit Rosby. Tyrick Lannister is set to inherit House Hayford's lands through marriage. If Tyrick is Rosby's ward and Littlefinger is blackmailing and controlling Tyrick, this gives him even more control over these lands close to King's Landing. It also looks like Bronn may well inherit Stokeworth, and I have a theory that Bronn is in Littlefinger's pocket too. But that's an email for another day. So there it is. Littlefinger has his finger in all of the pies. Hopefully we get some answers to this in the Winds of Winter, if we ever get it. Until then, I'll keep listening to Bend the Knee and coming up with tinfoil theories. I wish you good fortune in the wars to come, Lady Emma.
Wow. Thank you, Lady Emma, for that well-crafted, well-put-together theory. Yeah, as Tyrick Lannister is a character who is shrouded in mystery, right? I've been searching A Song of Ice and Fire wiki and Reddit to see just what people are saying about him. A lot of people think, yeah, maybe he's just died off screen. But as Lady Emma points out,
no.
A lot of these characters, Gurr doesn't like them to die off screen.
Right.
Right. So it is interesting, right? So Tyrick's around the same age as Sansa, right? As we said, he's a squire for Robert Baratheon alongside Lance Sell. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, he's now kind of missing, right? Some people think he might be Barriss, might have something to do with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think, Ez? What do you think?
Well, I think the it is very interesting that House Rosby nearby. We know there's a lot of stuff they do. I mean, a lot of the food, and you can control, you can anger the crowd in King's Landing by cutting off the food supply and making them kind of rail against the Red Keep and try to, whoever's in power there is in trouble because they need those surrounding crown land, you know, keeps and fields and what have you to bring in food for all of these people in King's Landing. So, and I said, like, I messed up. I think it's Giles Rosby. Meant to say, he's important. Lady Stokeworth, they're important to what happens around King's Landing. And so, yeah, it would make a lot of sense that you want control of that region. You would make, if you're Littlefinger, if you want to control some of that, or you want to influence people against the crown, you might want to control some of these chains of resources, food, supplies, whatever coming into King's Landing. So connecting Tyrick Lannister to this, because it's a missing person, and I do think he's probably alive, and we don't know where he's at.
Right. A lot of what's being brought up in the Forum of Ice and Fire and the Reddit community is everyone saying he's brought up far too often. Far too often. George does not usually do that unless he has a plan for them.
Right. And so this is why I like this connection. It's probably I'm reading this going, has anyone else said this is actually pretty cool? Because
Well done.
Yeah, very well done, because I haven't heard it. I haven't seen anybody make, you know, the connection between Tyrion Lannister and the Rosby Ward, because that's a easy place to go stash and store someone if you want to. I'm trying to think. I mean, they had Tommen on his way there as well. That was one of the places they were going to rush Tommen to for protection while Joffrey stayed in King's Landing. So it's not that far away, and it's something that they've done before with the Lannister, try to stash a Lannister there. So, I think, why not? And then the other connection that was kind of cool is that Tyrick is married into, or that, you know, betrayed, whatever, to House Hayford, and because of their lands and because of how prosperous they are and things like that. So then there's another connection to, you know, food, resources, I think that kind of makes sense. Now, I don't know, why would he be, because we don't really know much about the ward and whether or not the ward's actually like in control of things, or people are just keeping quiet on this. Like, someone has a pretty firm grip over that keep and what's happening and the information that's coming in and out of there. And if that is Littlefinger, then that's pretty awesome. That's pretty wild. And it wouldn't surprise me. But but then the other thing, the curveball though, right, is Varys could have been in the crowd and could have orchestrated this kidnapping and such, right? I mean, could have been the one who's behind it. So then we know those two aren't really working together.
Which gives him a chess piece against the Lannisters.
Right, but would he be the one stashing him over as the Rosby Ward? I mean, maybe not. I don't know.
A lot of people are saying that... and this is, a lot of these are older. This is an older thread here, but us from the wiki or the Forum of Ice and Fire. A lot of people are saying, do you think it's possible he left on his own, left King's Landing on his own? So maybe he's
Tyrick.
He just, yeah.
Could be. Could be. Let me. I don't know where he would go, or what would his reasoning be, unless he's worried that he is connected somehow to Robert's death or something. But let me read you guys real quick about the ward of Giles Rosby, who is a young male ward living at Rosby in the Crownlands. His name has not yet been mentioned, and Giles Rosby has no immediate heir. The ward of Lord, and a ward just means you've taken this person in. And right, mm-hmm. that you're yep. caring for, or whatever, you know. So the ward of Lord Giles Rosby refuses Lady Falsey Stokeworth and her husband, will not let them in when they're searching for shelter at Rosby on their way to King's Landing. Why? Why would you do that? Believes that the ward will try to claim Rosby when Giles passes away, although she feels like Rosby should instead pass to herself. Okay, so maybe that's one of the reasons, right? Don't want you to come in here and set up shop. And... yeah, Pycelle is informed Cersei that he's died. Cersei, you know, is trying to seize lands, gold, castles. Pycelle begins to object, telling her again that he had a ward there, and we should hesitate on that. We should think about that. Who is this ward, etc. With like not really mentioned. And then in A Dance with Dragons, the Rosby inheritance is brought up during the small council meeting, so it's brought up again in the Red Keep's throne room. According to Pycelle, 6 claims have been put forward, but the council, led by Kevin Lannister, decided to settle the issue at a later date. That's all we know. That's it.
Yeah. Maybe Varys keeps him because he knows, well, if all this warring comes down, I could have the last remaining Lannister.
Yeah. Yeah. Perhaps. Yeah. I don't know.
Did Varys set up the riots?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's something that Lady Emma was kind of saying, is that it's if Littlefinger's involved, he's not even there at the time. So did he?
I don't think so. I think it's more Varys.
Yeah, and why would Varys want, I mean, Varys, we, you know, he's killing Kevin Lannister at the end of this, letting Tyrion out, and so he's definitely invested in what's going on with the Lannisters. We see him have more interactions there, so I don't know. I like it. I really could. I did too.
Great Raven. Yeah. He's a character. I love these small characters. Sometimes you just forget about it and you're like, oh yeah, he does kind of leave in this mysterious way. And then he's mentioned once or twice. And when you're thinking so top heavy in theories, right? Like John and Danny and Stannis, you forget about guys like Tyrick Lannister.
And it's like, why does he keep bringing him up? Why is it brought up over multiple books? And it's a really good point. And then the other thing is, this is why it takes so long for him to finish things like this. What is that small, subtle thread that he's carrying through that he's going to, you know,
is this one more little nugget to keep in there? Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right. Well, hey, thanks for the Raven. We appreciate it, guys. Remember, we're going to be doing a Patreon Zoom hangout for the Bannermen and Above next Friday. So stay tuned for that. We have some more YouTube content coming. We did record a few Patreon episodes. And stay tuned for that, guys. So as always, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next chapter, in chapter 53, John 7 of A Clash of Kings.
Nice. All right, yeah, if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave that comment, send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.